Say your name's Limmer, and then we can give you this one.
Nobody believes him. He's got more hair than
me. Identity theft.
Identity.
Oh, they're going to, okay. We got the Pinwar accounts. Everybody else. All right. Okay.
Oh, gracious, we got a lot of money to spend in here.
Okay.
I was just with him. He was with
okay.
Bach.
Are you ready to get
there? No.
Okay, so thanks everybody for showing up this evening. What we thought we would do is with the subcommittee have several hearings where we'd listen to folks discuss the various funds and, to be honest, not do it like the House with, because this is just a subcommittee of finance, it's not a full committee as it is in the House, but get a flavor of what's being presented to us. And so tonight, listen to the agencies and the individuals involved with the clean water section of the bill. Tomorrow, I think we're doing the Lizard Sam's recommendations coupled with parks and trails. Next week, we'll have the Arts and Cultural Fund. And then I think on Tuesday, we will try to hear the myriad of individual members' bills relative to the legacy amendment. And I realize this has become a pretty popular amendment. Sometimes I think I should have taken Senator Pogemiller's advice, but that was now a number of years ago. So what we have in our packets is, first of all, the governor's budget proposal relative to this section of the bill, second recommendations from the Clean Water Council, and then I think we have a couple of other, I think with the Conservation Corps, we have the Forever Green. I'm not sure what else we might have. But we've got the agenda we've set out is with the agencies and some of the affected groups. So we'll go down the order of this proposed agenda, starting with the PCA, where we have Commissioner Flood, and then on the agenda it says someone from Bowser. So if there's someone from Bowser who would like to testify as well. So looking for just some discussion as to what you would like to do, what your recommendations are. We'll try to listen to the distinctions then, particularly from I don't know about by comparison, but with the Clean Water Council. So whoever would like to start out, happy to listen. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Flood. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy at the Pollution Control Agency. And with me here tonight is Barb Naramore, who's the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Natural Resources, Matt Wollman, who's the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Agriculture, and Dave Wirens is an Assistant Director at the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I think what we'd like to do is talk about the governor's clean water recommendations for you this evening.
So what we'd like to do is run through and just talk a little bit about the slides that we have provided in the packet, and then obviously entertain questions from the subcommittee. And wanted to start with just a little background and context and then really dig into the focus on the governor's recommendations and some of the progress that we're making to date on the under the Clean Water Legacy Fund. So the foundations of our clean water efforts in the state really are underpinned, and we're on slide three here, by the Federal Clean Water Act of 1972, the 1974 Safe Drinking Water Act, and our own state standards for water sustainability. And so, of course, the Federal Clean Water Act provides that foundation across all states for consistency to restore and maintain our chemical, physical, and biological integrity of our waters, and it does that primarily through a regulatory framework. And then we have layered on that the 74 Safe Drinking Water Act, which sets specific standards for the water as it comes out of our taps, and also standards and approaches for source water protection across the states. And then our own standards for sustainability seek to ensure that we use our water in ways that allow us to both meet current needs and future needs, that we maintain the quantity and quality of water necessary to meet those needs. So in 2006, Minnesota's Clean Water Legacy Act really put a focus on a systemic and systematic approach to monitoring and assessing our waters, and then to restoring those waters that are impaired. It also created the Clean Water Council to advise the administration and to inform implementation of that Legacy Act and to foster coordination. Then in 2008, of course, we had the Legacy Amendment and the objectives on focusing on restoration of impaired waters, protection and enhancement of those waters that are meeting standards, and a specific set-aside of 5% for drinking water protection under the fund. In 2013, we have the clarifying Clean Water Accountability Act, which defined the watershed restoration and protection strategies that we use, what should be in those strategies, established in statute tracking and reporting requirements, and directed preparation of a non-point priority funding plan. So the state agencies and under the governor's leadership back in 2008 established the interagency clean water team to help coordinate across the agencies the implementation of the Clean Water Fund. And our goal is really to work with the Clean Water Council and other partners to establish and then execute a long-term plan to ensure that we're making the right combination of investments in basic research, in data collection, and in planning to inform the primary expenditures under the fund, which are the on-the-ground projects that are designed to improve water quality and make the most of the state's Clean Water Fund investments. There are several principles, then, that underlie the governor's recommendations that we want to talk with you about this evening, and those include using this long-term systemic approach to watershed protection to continue to accelerate the project implementation work, but to make sure we're sustaining some of those foundational investments over time to inform and target that work. We want to focus on the watershed approach to ensure coordination across the agencies. We want to make sure we're promoting innovation. We're leveraging other funding where we have opportunities to do that. And that our investments are really allowing us to target our work and to have a continuous improvement process. We're really looking at the results we're getting and using those to inform our future investments. We're emphasizing implementation of on-the-ground projects while maintaining some of those foundational programmatic investments that are really needed to ensure the efficacy of the project work. So on slide 8, you see a pie chart that lays out the governor's recommendations for the 16-17 biennium. And as you can see from the chart, nearly half of those funds are allocated to non-point source protection and restoration activities, that implementation work. We also have approximately 15% dedicated to groundwater and drinking water protection, about 12% to watershed restoration and protection strategies work, about 11% to water quality monitoring and assessment, some of that foundational information that's needed to both inform work and track progress, 9% to point source work, and 4% to some applied research and tool development that we really think is important to maintaining innovation over time in the program. Slide 9 then shows you in a bar chart form the governor's recommendations relative to what the legislature enacted for the 14-15 biennium. And again, I'd like to underscore that there's nearly $33 million more in the non-point source implementation category under the governor's recs for the 16-17 biennium relative to the current. And it, of course, shows you those distinctions or differences across the other elements of the Clean Water Fund as well.
And so why has there been the significant difference in the governor's recommendations this year as opposed to 2 years ago relative to the non-point sources?
Well, we think it's fundamentally important to increase that investment in the non-point source. We think we have the opportunity to do that in the current biennium, both with some growth in the fund, some efficiencies we've gained in some of our other areas of investment, and then some unspent money from prior appropriations that some of the agencies, and in particular, most notably, the Public Facilities Administration, have been able to turn back to the fund. So it presented us with some nice opportunities to increase implementation. So I will turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Woolman to talk a little bit in more detail about some of those non-point source activities.
Okay. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As Barb had talked about, the non-point source activities count for about 49% of the governor's recommendation of around $109 million. These dollars primarily go to the Board of Soil and or Water and Soil Resources to help meet the statewide water quality protection goals through prevention and the reduction of non-point source activities. These dollars are largely put through a competitive grant program, and this competitive grant program works through a local delivery system to fund projects that are prioritized and targeted to the most critical areas on the landscape. And the Clean Water Fund easements are provided for permanent protection of private land and riparian and groundwater protection areas, resulting in improved surface water quality and health and security of community water supplies. Also want to just note that the Clean Water Fund resources are allocated through a decision-making process based on science, prioritized through local planning and a commitment to identify projects that will be the most effective at enhancing our water quality. The clean water projects that we have funded across the state from 2010 through 2014. There are just a few of these that are noted on the map, 595 Clean Water Fund awards, installing more than 4,552 conservation projects that have worked to reduce erosion, stormwater runoff, to keep water back on the landscape. These awards include public and private projects and involve Minnesotans who are voluntarily engaging in these activities. These conservation practices have estimated to reduce about 74,500 tons of sediment ending up in our streams and rivers per year, and prevent about 61,600 pounds of phosphorus entering Minnesota waters every year. I also want to note, as a part of these clean water implementation projects, the Department of Agriculture had a new ag water quality certification program, and this program has currently about 260 farmers that are signed up. 34 farmers are certified. They are operating in about 3% of the state's water landscape, and they've installed about 104 new conservation practices, and they are also significantly reducing water quality contamination. The governor's recommendation for this program is $5 million, and this is a critical area because we have currently been awarded about $9 million through the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, that the $5 million in clean water funds would leverage that $9 million in federal funds. The Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Legacy Funding Conservation Easements. To date, the Clean Water Fund and the Outdoor Heritage Funds have provided support for about 837 easements, permanently protecting 31,460 acres of Minnesota lands, ramping up our work to create and restore wildlife habitat, improve hunting and fishing, reduce soil erosion, improve water quality, provide flood retention, and enhance water groundwater retention and water quality. Over the RIM program's history, there's been 6,276 easements that are permanently protecting 258,948 acres of Minnesota land, a significant investment through the Clean Water Fund. The ground and drinking water section accounts for about 15% of the governor's recommendation, or $33.6 million. There are a number of areas and a number of agencies that are involved in this area, conservation easements for wellhead protection, private well monitoring for nitrates, just to name a few. The Constitution requires a minimum of 5% of clean water dollars go to protect drinking water, and the governor's recommendation here in this area is 15%. Accelerated source water protection, the goal is to complete all of the plans, working with local communities that have high risk for community public water supplies. The Minnesota Department of Health is primarily responsible in this area. It's the primary way to protect drinking water. These plans are 10-year plans, and they address the sources of contamination, areas of land surface that drains towards these wells. The plan includes action steps for how to mitigate these problems. And the Clean Water Fund helps the Department of Health and the state accelerate these activities, and under normal funding, it would have taken until about 2040 to complete the plans across the state. And as a result of the Clean Water Fund's acceleration, we'll have most of these plans completed by 2020. So in the slide that's slide 15, wellhead protection plan progress, the goal is 960 plans across the state. The Department of Health is about one-third of the way there, with 360 plans approved. However, 500 of the public water suppliers are currently engaged or developing a plan through this this appropriation. I'll next turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Rebecca Flood.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. On slide 16, then, the governor's package recognizes the need for us to stay the course with our 10-year cycle for understanding what is happening with our water resources so that we can actually prioritize those on-the-ground activities that Assistant Commissioner Wollman was just sharing with you. Without this information, we really have an incomplete understanding of where and how to prioritize our work. It's kind of like ready, fire, aim. So if we don't really know where the problems are, it's very difficult for us to prioritize where to take actions that will make the most difference on the ground. And in particular, the Clean Water Council recommendations puts the watershed restoration and protection strategy development at risk. The Pollution Control Agency will not be able to meet its requirements under Minnesota Statute 114D with $106 million less in the council's recommendations than in the governor's recommendations. One of the reasons that the administration's recommendations for these RAPs vary so much from the council's is that the Office of Legislative Auditor conducted an audit of the PCA and identified that other funds that we utilize are subsidizing the PCA's clean water funded work for the development of RAP. So the governor's budget recommendations tried to correct that identified deficiency, but regrettably, due to the OLA's process, we were not able to share that information with the Clean Water Council at the time that they were preparing their budget recommendations, since the OLA's audit did not become publicly available until just this January. On slide 17, I want to point out that these maps illustrate how we're implementing our watershed approach in our 80 major watersheds throughout the state. The monitoring here includes biological and chemical assessments of our lakes, streams, as well as provides information on stream flow, mercury, contaminants of emerging concern, pesticides, and bacteria monitoring. We have flow and pollutant loads are monitored every year, and according to our watershed approach, every 10 years, then we visit each one of these major watersheds and do intensive biological monitoring to understand whether or not we have the right biology present in these streams. And once we conduct this initial monitoring, the next time that we come through in these particular watersheds, we'll be able to gather information to see exactly how effective our on-the-ground activities are achieving our clean water-funded goals. The passage of the Clean Water Constitutional Amendment provides that stable, secure funding for us to understand our water resources. We're on track to complete the first 10-year cycle by 2017, and so we'll start that cycle again beginning in 2018 in accordance with Minnesota Statute 114D. On slide 18, we have $20.4 million in the governor's recommendations that are going to point source implementation to address pollutants from municipalities. These are composed of grants to help cities construct wastewater and stormwater infrastructure projects to meet various permit requirements, including more stringent effluent limitations to meet water quality standards. In addition, we've had funding that has helped small, unsewered communities address problems with their failing individual septic systems. Slide 19, there are a number of outcomes from this point source implementation program, including the reduction of 120,000 pounds of phosphorus per year, which can generate an astounding 60 million pounds of algae per year. So we're definitely reducing phosphorus in order to clean up our water resources. We've also reduced mercury in discharges and have prevented more than 100,000 gallons of untreated sewage from septic systems from entering our surface waters and our groundwaters. On page slide 20, this graphic represents our estimated statewide municipal wastewater treatment facility phosphorus reduction since the year 2000 and estimates first future reductions based on the implementation of our current permitting rules. It also demonstrates the anticipated increases in phosphorus loading that would have resulted from these had these changes not occurred. So overall, these combined efforts have led to a steady decline of phosphorus pollution in our waterways and increased clarity because of reduced algae generation. Slide 21, the governor's budget request also recommends $8.4 million for research and applied tools. One of the highlights in this category is our work in developing county geologic atlases. These atlases are essential in our understanding of our groundwater resources. So it helps us understand how much and where our groundwater is and then how it moves underground. These atlases are essential information that helps us make informed choices to ensure the long-term sustainability of those groundwater resources. In addition, we've developed a roadmap that sets out our long-term goals for water resources, as well as developed measures so we can track and report the performance as we move through these various on-the-ground activities to achieve our clean water outcomes. Finally, the clean water funded, on page 23, the clean water funded agencies have developed what we think is a systematic and programmatic approach that's intended to maximize the effectiveness of the Clean Water Fund by taking that long-term view that Commissioner Naramore mentioned of funding needs rather than jumping from hot topic to hot topic. Additionally, we have an increased focus on implementation with nearly half of the upcoming biennium's request going to non-point source implementation, which is a $32 million increase over the current biennium. We have $18 million in Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. This is an interagency effort to implement what's called, the acronym being CREP, that's aimed at restoring surface water quality in areas targeted for nutrient reductions and protecting sensitive groundwater and drinking water resources. And groundwater in Minnesota is at risk from overuse and contamination. Our state, regional, and local governments are working together with citizens and groundwater users to ensure sustainability of our supply. Clean Water Fund dollars are used to monitor and assess groundwater and develop strategies to address quantity and quality issues and provide funding to protect drinking water supplies. With that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we would be happy to stand for any questions that the committee may have at this time.
Couple of questions. there was the reference made to some of the differences between the clean water recommendations and the agency recommendations. Does any of this get into the question? I just want to, what kind of consideration you've given to this very subjective language of supplement and supplant as to whether or not you've discussed that within the agencies and how that relates to your recommendations and even what your obviously nobody's brought a court challenge to anything, but since it's constitutional language, what your thoughts are about that. So maybe it's a question both to the particularity of what you're presenting as well as just a general question as to what discussions have taken place with the interagency group.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the interagency coordination team is very cognizant of the supplement and substitute argument, and we've worked very diligently in developing for the governor to consider these budget recommendations that we feel meet the constitutional requirements. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Okay, but if we have, there's some discussion about some of, I think somebody had mentioned the word deficit, for instance. Maybe I misunderstood or misheard, but where I thought there was some discussion of some holes within the budget and utilizing this money to fill that hole. Did I misunderstand that, or?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think you might be referencing the report from the Office of the Legislative Auditor.
Yeah.
Just for visual aids, released here in January, February. The legislative auditor was saying that basically that other funds that were allocated to the Pollution Control Agency were actually paying for what should be covered under the Clean Water Fund. So that's coming directly from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And I know that there have been previous audits that the OLA has done that has looked at that very question. Mm-hmm. So we take these recommendations as meaning that we need to correct this deficit and that there wouldn't be issues with substitute and supplement.
Okay. It still sounds as if there's some degree, and I'll be the first to admit that in drafting the language, there was clearly some degree of ambiguity relative to that definition. And to be honest, it's not directed just simply at the agencies. I think it's replete through all funds within the legacy amendment as to where that fine line is. But I was curious as to conversations that have taken place, if they were fairly extensive, if they were done with advice with counsel from the Attorney General's office or certainly with counsel within the agencies as to how you dealt with that language distinction.
Mr. Chair, if I might, too, this audit covers July 2011 through March of 2014. In that time period, the Office of Management and Budget came forth with some particular recommendations on how to implement various aspects of the Clean Water Fund. It wasn't originally there at the time period in which this audit covered, but we've since gotten some additional guidance from MMB that has help further guide our work and conversations about substitute and supplement.
And that further guidance is? You said you've had some further guidance since the legislative auditor's report.
Right. I think what that covers, Mr. Chair, is how we look at various portions of what existing programs have been funding various parts of our activities and making sure that whatever we do in developing our budget recommendations is an acceleration of what we, if it's a program that we have done in the past, that those programs are maintained and that whatever is funded through Clean Water Fund is done as an add-on or a supplement or an additional amount of work. For example, the PCA, for example, has always done monitoring and assessment work, but with Clean Water Funds, it's really been placed on this dramatically escalated and accelerated time schedule.
And secondly, a little bit different, the governor announced, and I look around the room, there are some folks who can tell me exactly what it was called, but I think it was at the meeting in Brooklyn Park in late January where he announced his support for the buffer zones, the waterway buffer zones. What's requested by way of language and or money relative to the governor's suggestion, proposal?
Mr. Chair, I believe what the governor is proposing in his supplemental budget is actually to redirect a portion of money directed to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for drainage implementation to support the implementation of the buffer initiative by soil and water conservation districts.
But he's doing that in the budget itself, in the regular general fund budget, as opposed to the clean water.
Mr. Chair, no, that is not my understanding. It is clean water funds that would be are proposed.
Okay, that's
what
I thought. So what's the request? What's the dollar request?
It's $2.4 million.
Okay. And was that, and how was the 2.4 determined? Why 2.4 as opposed to some other number?
Mr. Chair, I can get you the more details of how it was arrived at, but it was to take some existing funds that had a similar purpose to deal with drainage management to help support the initiative.
And is it anticipated that this would be an ongoing initiative? Because I assume that amount would not be. It struck me that the governor's proposal was fairly sweeping in what he suggested. So is the assumption that this would be a year-to-year program then?
Mr. Chair, certainly the expectation is that the BARF initiative would be an ongoing program during the initial years as it is implemented. And the funding would be necessary for some period of time to get through that the implementation period.
Okay. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification. So in the governor's supplemental budget, there's $2.4 million to take care of all of those, that the new buffer areas. And what's the $2.4 going to be used for? I guess that's my understanding is I heard estimates of like many, many more millions that it would cost for those buffers. For easements and everything like that. So I'm wondering the $2.4 million, and I understand you're going to find out how that number was arrived at. But so I just want to make sure I understood what you said, that is the $2.4 that's in the supplemental budget is for those buffers.
Matt, Mr. Chair, and Senator Fischbach, I have a chance to turn to Assistant Commissioner Naramore. The $2.4 million I referred to is to provide support for soil and water conservation districts for their responsibilities under the buffer initiative, and that's all that money is intended to be used for.
Oh, Mr. Chair, and I guess Assistant Commissioner, correct? So there's no money for easements or anything like that. This is like administrative money is what you're talking about.
The Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, the intention is to use federal funds to pay for some of those landowner costs that would be associated with the buffer initiative.
And Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner, just since we started the conversation, and I realize it's not completely relative, but the federal funds, and I've heard about these federal funds. I'm just wondering if you have any, just even a few more details about those, and if we have them, if how, I mean, if we pass this legislation, if we pass the buffer legislation, what happens then? I mean, do we then apply for the federal funds, or are they just because we passed it they come, or how are they connected?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, members of the committee, I'd like an opportunity to provide you with a more comprehensive written answer to the very important question about the totality of the funding behind the governor's buffers initiative. What I can share, hopefully, by way of clarification this evening, is the governor's supplemental budget request did take some additional money that MMB had identified as being available in the Clean Water Fund, you know, based on new revenue projections that came in after the governor's initial budget request, and targeted that to some implementation funding for the buffers initiative. I should also note that the governor's initial recommendations did include small bits of money for both the Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Water and Soil Resources to do buffers work. So this predated the initiative and was really part of our ongoing recognition that buffers are important, and included some data collection as well as some support money for local governments on implementation. But the governor's broader budget initiative, I think to your point, certainly includes other potential funding sources, both federal and state, and I'd like an opportunity to provide you with a more comprehensive summary of those, because I think I just don't have those numbers in my head, and I apologize for that.
Okay. Senator Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing up that was turning out to be somewhat of an unpopular discussion here. And this year is the 50-foot, whether you believe in it or not. It's certainly taking up a lot of discussion. But the question I would have is, Commissioner, you reported that X amount of acres have been put into the CREP program. Maybe you can define those acres since the beginning of the Clean Water Fund. And give us a little idea, and I know you're going to do a written response to the buffer strip, but how many, I think there's a number floating around of how many acres of buffer zone would actually take in the governor's proposal, and compare that to the work that's been done with the Clean Water Fund. I don't know if you know where I'm going here with this, but there's an awful lot of good work going on now with this fund that we're talking about tonight, and there may be a case to be made that it's even better than the 50-foot buffer strip.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, there are two things going on here. There's the governor's buffer initiative, but there's also the CREP initiative that's also part of the proposal here. And there certainly is some overlap between those initiatives and how they'll be implemented in terms of the impact, because some of the work in the CREP initiative would cover buffer areas that would otherwise be covered by the governor's buffer initiative.
So maybe just, Mr. Chair, a point of clarity on the CREP program. Can you explain that a little bit to those that may not know? It's been around for some time. And then you have the REM program.
Certainly, we can get you a Mr. Chair and Senator, we get you a handout, more information on that as well, too. It's a program that we enter in with the partnership with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, in which we, the proposal that we're working on in particular is to work with, again, the USDA, to seek funding that in partnership with the state of Minnesota would set aside 100,000 acres. The primary focus of this CREP that we're working on, and it's not finalized at this point in time, would be in areas to address water quality concerns, principally to address phosphorus and nitrogen problems that are occurring principally in the southwestern third of the state, by and large, and to work in those areas of the state. Again, that the proposal is under development at this point in time with USDA, and we are certainly optimistic that we'll achieve success with that proposal as we go forward. But that is
okay. Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I could, so to answer my question, how many acres are included in this 50-foot buffer strip proposal that the governor has just recently?
I believe the area is 125,000 acres is what that amount is.
Mr. Chair, if I could, another question. The mapping you talked about, utilizing the mapping, does that have access by RUG, local units of government? Can counties have access to that proposal when you get that done, when you get the mapping of the groundwater?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, members of the subcommittee, yes, absolutely. The county geological atlases are publicly available information. We serve that data readily on our website and so forth. Yes.
Can you, Mr. Chair, and could you tell me how the counties would utilize that?
Mr. Chair,
or cities, for that matter.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, members of the subcommittee, I believe that counties, municipalities, and others use those data for a quite wide variety of purposes, including their own water supply planning purposes. The data can be very useful for local units of government as well as the state as we're engaged in groundwater protection efforts. When it comes to managing contaminated groundwater, those data are also very important. We look at them very closely in the context of an information resource for environmental review and permitting decisions. I know that local units of government do that as well. Those county geological atlas data seem to be quite highly sought after.
And just thank you very much. And Mr. Chair, and could you tell me about cleaning up contaminated soils? Is some of the dollars being used for that, utilized for that? I know we have the what's called the Petro Fund that's kind of a standalone fund that we've been funding for years. Do you do any cleanups at all with this money? Obviously, that certainly helps the drinking water situation. Have you had any projects like that?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, we don't use clean water funds specifically to clean up sites that are contaminated by petrocarbons or other types of soil contaminations. There are other funds and programs that we utilize in order to do that work. But certainly we need to be aware of where those types of contaminated sites are so that we make sure that we're properly managing any kind of water that may be going through that land or running off that land so we don't do further harm in terms of our water resources. But clean water funds are not directed to those activities.
Thank you.
Senator Stone.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back to slide 14, dealing with community public water supplies. If a community is very upset with the quality of water, and I'll just pass this around. This is a picture of water that came out of a tap in a community. What do these people really what can they do if to get some action on that? I believe the community is Minnetrista. And I'm helping out the metro area here, but when you see that quality of that water, it's amazing that something hasn't been done by now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, and members of the committee, my name is Randy Ellingbo with the Minnesota Department of Health, and I'm the manager of the section of drinking water protection there. And a couple quick comments on that. The community public water supplies in Minnesota are required to meet the Safe Drinking Water Act requirements set by EPA. So they have to meet standards on about 100 chemicals and meet maximum contaminant levels there. And so when we have a situation where a community either has a problem with meeting those maximum contaminant levels or the standards, we of course require the city to take care of that situation. And typically what they'll do is of course understand what the contaminant issue is, develop a plan for how to deal with that, put together a proposal for how to develop put the solutions into place, which can take some time and funding to do that. For Minnetrista, in a situation like you describe here, where in this case, it looks like this might have been a situation where the mains had been flushed. Sometimes when that occurs, it'll get rust moving and other things like that. The city will provide information to the public that they may have a water quality problem for a time. So I guess to boil it back down, the city residents will provide their comments or complaints to the city. Sometimes they'll provide them to us. We'll work with the city to identify what the problem is, propose a schedule for taking care of it. The city of Minnetrista is in the process right now of developing solutions for how to address these problems. While those solutions are being developed, though, there can be situations like this where the problems continue until a new treatment plant or some other solution like new wells is put into place. So to summarize, the key is that the city needs to develop a solution, have a bit of time to put it into place, and in the meantime inform citizens about what the nature of the problem is and how they may need to respond to that in order to be aware of the problems.
I contacted the state senator out there, and in his words, that's been an ongoing problem. And so I'm not sure what and the people out there that I've talked to, and I'm not sure why I'm doing this, but the people out there haven't had satisfaction from meetings. They haven't had any kind of an idea of, like, you know, when this would be taken care of. Is it a year, 2 years, 5 years? And so they're not very happy.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, we have received those complaints as well, and so our staff have been working with the city on that plan. I can get back to you with more details about the likely schedule for resolving the problem on a long-term basis. I'll need to check with staff, but long and short of it is our staff have been working with them to try to get these issues addressed, and certainly the city officials are familiar with the concerns of the citizens, and I know that said that citizens are also in some cases not happy with the progress that's been made. Yeah.
Well, when I saw a funding increase for the grant program, I thought maybe that would be a way to help them out or something.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, there are funds available through the Public Facilities Authority for addressing these problems. There's a drinking water revolving fund that is intended to help provide funding to address problems just like this. And so that's where the city will work with us both to get involved in that loan program, as well as they need to come to us with their proposed solutions for how to address that. And so there is funding available. Typically, clean water funds are not going to address this because there are other funds available to do that.
Just a follow-up.
Sarah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is quite disturbing. You know, Senator Stump showed me that picture. And I guess I don't understand how within our regulations that we would allow drinking water that looked like that to persist.
Mr. Chair, Senator, a couple quick comments on that. This case, typically that the brown water color is caused by minerals like iron and sometimes manganese. And while they may not be at a level that causes a specific health issue, nevertheless, they're an aesthetic issue. They're an appearance problem. It can cause problems for the residents when they wash clothes, things like that. And so
while Minnetrista has been dealing with this issue where residents have been concerned about water quality, one of the solutions they've had is to flush their water mains in order to bring newer water into the locations where there are complaints. And that can cause rust that is developed on the pipes to move. And so they will inform residents that they're going to flush the pipes. And so my understanding is that this is a problem that occurs not all the time, but on the occasions when they flush the mains and so on. And so it until they get their replacement system for treatment in, unfortunately, I think the problems will persist some time. And so it's, in this case, an issue of compounds that don't exceed the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act standards, but nevertheless are this color, odor, and aesthetic problem.
And then final follow-up, Mr. Chair, is wouldn't this be under the purview of the Met Council? Because don't they have the wastewater treatment accountability?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the drinking water systems are not under Met Council's purview. The wastewater systems are, drinking water systems are managed by the individual cities. Sometimes they'll share water across boundaries, but the public water supplies are managed by the cities themselves.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Hey, Senator Thomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I'm seeing the word implementation a lot here. So is implementation the same as administrative? Is it synonymous with administrative, or what is implementation?
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, no, they are different terms. Implementation refers to projects that are implemented on the ground, most often by local governments that work directly to resolve a local prioritized and targeted water quality concern that has been identified.
So the $2.4 million for the implementation of the buffer zone, is that for planting grass, or is it identifying where the buffer zones need to be planted, or what is the $2.4 million for?
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, the purpose of those funds that have been discussed previously is to provide support for some of our conservation districts to work with landowners on complying with the buffer requirement.
Are they not already employed by us?
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, no, those are local government employees.
So we're paying. So what are we doing here? We're paying the local governments the $2.4 million, not the DNR.
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, that is the purpose of that appropriation, as recommended by the governor.
And what do those people then do?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, the purpose is to ensure that the sonar conservation districts have the staff on hand to perform the additional work that is currently not required under law.
Okay. What's the additional work? I mean, I don't get it. So we're requiring buffer zones. So then the farmer has to put in a 50-foot buffer zone. So what's the additional work?
Mr. Chair,
is it enforcement? Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, I believe that the majority of the work that we're expecting is that the way the current legislation proposes is it is not necessarily a 50-foot everywhere, but there are opportunities to have alternative practices where they're appropriate. And a majority of that work is to work landowners to determine what those alternative actions might in fact be.
So are those local government officials not employed by the local government already?
Mr. Chair and Senator Thomasoni, the expectation is the work they're not currently doing, and sure they have the staff on hand to do that work.
So we essentially are hiring somebody new.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Thomasoni, I think the expectation is that the money funds provided to the Sonora Conservation Districts, and they determine how they could provide that staffing need to get the work done. In some cases, they might reassign existing staff. That certainly is possible. In other cases, it might result in additional staff being hired. That's possible.
Well, if you tell me additional staff's being hired, that's one thing. But if you say reassign staff, they're still being paid. So then you don't need the money. So I'm trying to figure out, Senator Metzen and I have been trying to get to this administrative stuff for a really, really long time. You guys tell us we need administrative money, and yet the person doing the work is already hired by you. And so, no, I can't figure out where the money goes. So where does the money actually then go? Do we have a lockbox somewhere in the DNR that we store it for a rainy day, or how does this work exactly?
Well, perhaps Mr. Chair and Sarah Tomasoni, we might be better served to coordinate a response that Assistant Commissioner Moy identified to lay out in more detail exactly what we would think the funds would be used for and expect the funds to be used for as proposed by the governor.
Okay, add that into your explanation, okay? Thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Real quickly, thank you, Mr. Chair. The enforcing agency is going to be the DNR, the buffer ship, should it become law, correct? In this proposal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, members of the subcommittee, yes, my understanding is that is the governor's proposal, that the DNR would work with the local units of government on enforcement issues.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, and whoever wants to take a stab at it, since Senator Stumpf brought up the local water issues, I'm just kind of curious, as I look at this, your goal is to complete all plans for high-risk community public water suppliers by 2020. It's on 14. What constitutes high risk? And I guess, when you have issues like in Minnetrista, and I know that I have some in my district, I'm just kind of wondering what is high risk. That kind of yellow iced tea looking water isn't high risk. So just kind of curious.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the high risk areas that we're talking about in this context, there are areas of the state where groundwater supplies that are used for drinking water are they don't have protective layers of rock or soil over the top, and so they can be contaminated by activities at the surface, land use activities, and so the Central Sands area in Minnesota, some parts of southeastern Minnesota, et cetera. And so when we talk about sensitivity or highly vulnerable areas for groundwater pollution in the drinking water context, it's those areas like that where things that happen at the surface, if there are spills or other contamination events, they can make their way down to the drinking water supply. And so we have prioritized those areas of the state as the first ones for doing these wellhead protection planning efforts. Other areas of the state, because of the geology there, the aquifers are better protected, and so it's not that they can't be contaminated, but it typically would take longer to contaminate that. So we're prioritizing based on the sensitivity or the likelihood that problems will come from the surface, that spills, et cetera, will be a problem. For problems like that described for Minnetrista, where you get orange water and so on, that's typically related to the rock formations, the geology at the site that the aquifer comes from, and there can be iron deposits, manganese deposits, other things that contribute to that orange color. And so public water supplies, because of the appearance problems, the aesthetic problems, they'll typically treat for that. Even if it's not specifically a public health issue, it nevertheless is a water quality problem that cities need to address. So to come back to the point about our prioritization scheme for working with cities with highly vulnerable wellhead protection areas, we focus on those areas where the aquifers can be affected by activities at the land surface.
So, Mr. Chair, so what this is preventative. This is not addressing issues that are really happening today that people, that cities, and the impression that I got is you had mentioned, I can't remember if you were responding to Senator Stumpf or maybe Senator Ingebrigtsen, but you had said that they should go to the PFA. And as I look, it looks like the PFA, the proposal includes about $18 million, and over here, this preventative is about $33.6 million. So the PFA is always underfunded, and so if you're just pointing, you know, all cities to go there, there's not enough. I mean, there's never enough to go around, obviously, but the PFA is always tight.
Mr. Chair, Senator, in regard to the funding, there are other federal funds loaned out through the state through PFA to take care of drinking water systems. And so that's a separate source from this. So when we direct the cities to seek funding through PFA, it's primarily to get funds from the other loan fund that's not Clean Water Fund. It's a revolving fund.
I understand. But Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Oh, you're over there now. but Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just, if this is preventative, there's obviously an issue there, and whether you say it's just kind of cosmetic, the color is bad, but it's still good, clean water, I still doubt that, you know, folks are going to be drinking it, unless they're using very dark glasses to drink. But in addition, I am aware of other places that are having issues with very with contamination or very close to be contaminated that, you know, that needs to be addressed too. And I just feel like spending a lot of money on preventative when there's other what I would consider high risk. I understand you're dealing with a different issue here, but. Still, just to point people to the PFA and the federal funds, and I mean, I don't think we've ever had everybody satisfied from the PFA because there's always cities who are looking for to upgrade, to fix things, to deal with their water. So,
Mr. Ellingbaugh.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator, wanted to return to one of your comments. To about wellhead protection efforts. I just did want to mention that in addition to prevention, one of the typical activities cities will, one of the things that they will typically do is identify existing pollution sources that may contribute to groundwater pollution, and the intent is to be aware of those so that that can be addressed. And there are other programs typically for groundwater cleanup, as has already been mentioned here. Today, the other piece was that the $33.9 million for drinking water, groundwater drinking water efforts are not all directed towards wellhead protection efforts. There are other activities in there as well. So,
and Mr. Chair, I guess I just have to follow up.
Senator Fischbach.
I have a city in my district. Not the one you're thinking of. Another city that has a plume benzene headed towards their drinking water source, and it has not been addressed repeatedly. It's been years, and it has not been addressed and not been addressed. And no, it hasn't contaminated it yet. But so I guess maybe you don't consider it a problem at this point. You know, in a couple of years when we're having to bring in bottled water, then we can consider it a problem. So I guess I got to wonder, you know, where the priorities are on, you know, when I see another example of the water over there, and I know in my district there's this issue with the water or potential contamination, and we have been, you know, the city's been fighting and begging and, you know, asking and meeting after meeting after meeting, and I just continued, oh, we'll monitor it. And that's about all. And with all the money we spent monitoring, we could have upgraded the sewer or the water treatment plant by now. So I had to, since we since I had this, had the opening, I had to mention it because it's just it's beyond my comprehension how we can let these things go like this.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
can I just add to this discussion a little bit? Having had, or I represent communities that have been impacted by groundwater contamination, I think it's important that in the budget, though, we not supplement funds that should be funded in other ways through the MPCA to protect or to replace the water. I'm not coming up with the right words, but for example, in Lake Elmo and other southeastern Twin Cities towns that were impacted by perfluorinated chemicals, once a level was established by the Department of Health, and I don't know if there's a similar level set for benzene, if that level is exceeded, then the MPCA has to provide drinking water to residents where that level is set. So I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate that all of that work gets done in the Clean Water Fund, but perhaps it needs to be done in just the regular work of the agencies and in protection of groundwater and ensuring that residents have access to clean water.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stevens, with all due respect, I don't want to have to be bringing in bottled water. I'd like to deal with it beforehand, and I would, and if the department was actually addressing it, I would be happy.
Right, but Senator Fischbach, what I'm saying is if they're exceeding the levels of benzene that are safe, then there are other measures that are appropriate for the state agencies to take to provide alternative sources of water or systems on their drinking water plant so that the benzene is removed from the water. So maybe you just need to work with the agencies to see if the benzene levels are being exceeded.
And Mr. Fischbach. Chair, no, the benzene, they're not, Senator Stephen, they're not being exceeded at this point, but the plume is headed there, and that is exactly what we are trying to do. We have been trying to get the plant upgraded, so, and among other things. Okay. So, yeah, we're trying. So.
Okay, I think what we're getting into here is probably the supplant versus what the actual function of the MPCA is and PFA for that matter. So I don't know that we're going to, but the concerns are certainly there. You know of those. Any other questions of the members that are here? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go now to Clean Water Council, Mr. Flowers and Mr. Hansen. Now, I'm not sure who would like to go first, but please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Flowers. I'm the current chair of the Clean Water Council. And with me is Keith Hansen, who's the chair of our Budget and Outcomes Committee, as well as the coordinator for the Clean Water Council, Barb Peichel. Thank you for your time this evening, and we greatly appreciate you taking the time to hear us. We do have a presentation we'd like to go through. The fortunate thing for you is the PCAs and the agencies have covered a little bit of it in terms of who we are and what we are and why we exist. So I'll spare you reiterating that and move a little bit further along. One quick thing about the council, and this is on slide two, we do represent a fairly broad range of interests from across the state. It's not just strictly the metro area. It's outstate Minnesota and rural areas. And all of those interests come together within the council to work through the process to make our recommendations that we make for each biennium. It provides a very challenging climate to work in, but it also provides for a fairly balanced approach that comes up with some fairly good, solid recommendations. I'm going to skip slide three, and let me go to slide four, where we talk a little bit about how we developed our recommendations this year. We took a little bit of a change from what we'd done in previous bienniums. Previously, the process was we mainly had interactions with the state agencies. After that interaction, some questions going back and forth, sometimes asking those questions about supplement and supplant, where we had some very specific issues that would arise as we'd look at the information provided. We then would develop the draft recommendations, and towards the tail end of that process, actually engage stakeholders then to get a little bit of feedback. What we did differently this year was, first, we developed a set of guiding principles and priorities. What was important to us as a council as we developed the funding recommendations? We wanted to set up a structure that we would evaluate the information from the agencies with to begin with. We also went out to our stakeholder groups and asked them to give us feedback on those principles and priorities, which they did. So we engaged them a lot earlier in our process than normal. Those principles and priorities we enumerate a little bit for you on slide 5. I'll get there in just a second. But we ended up going through that process several times. So we developed those draft recommendations, vetted them through the council, through our stakeholder groups, and then we used those to vet the recommendations that came from the agencies on the various programs that they brought to us. We reviewed the performance of 60 programs. We spent a fair amount of time on a number of programs actually poking into that supplement versus supplant. And it's, I'll be honest with you, the state accounting system makes that a little bit opaque. It's not a very transparent thing to really dig deeply into that, to really divine between, is it really supplement? Is it really supplant? But we did the best that we could do, and the agencies were good in responding back to us and providing information. We went through the process of the stakeholder input and then developed the actual final recommendation that came forward to the council in October. And that's, it's important to recognize there is a little bit of a disconnect between the governor's budgeting process and the budgeting process for the Clean Water Council, and that the council has to have its recommendation to the governor by December 1st. And if you remember a minute ago, they said that the auditor's report didn't become public until January and February. So there's an important just relationship there I want to plant in your mind for a minute, and we'll get a little more deeply into that as we talk about our recommendations. When you look at the principles and priorities, and this is slide 5 that we developed, the first thing was we wanted to make sure that we were funding things that actually achieved significant new progress towards the goal of clean water. When you look at the roadmap and you look at the Clean Water Progress Report, you see that some of what's being predicted doesn't seem all that, it's a moving target, but at the same time, it doesn't seem like much progress is going to be made. And that's been an issue that the council's been struggling with for the last year, trying to understand how can we make better progress than that. And so one of our goals was to really focus on trying to fund programs where we could see significant new progress. Secondly, we were focused on outcomes. We really wanted to fund those things that would provide real on-the-ground progress. And so some of that means implementing the science and the knowledge we have now, and some of it means doing some of that research to improve that in the future, but not to delay doing what will work now. We wanted to continue the implementation of the state's watershed approach. We agree with the agencies that probably offers one of the best opportunities to actually coordinate these various programs, from the work that Bowser does to the work that PCA and DNR do, the stuff that PFA has to offer through their loan programs, and to bring those a much more focused approach to where our problems really are and to where we actually have good monitoring to show that the outcomes are being achieved. And then we wanted to make sure we strengthen local capacity. And then one of the important kind of not just check boxes but balancing acts was to make sure that those programs that bring more funds in that we can leverage with the Clean Water Fund, we want to do that. We want to get more bang for the buck, and where we can get $1.50 brought in when we can spend $1 with the Clean Water Fund and add that $1.50 to it, we wanted to do that because that just gives us that much more effort for the money that the taxpayers of Minnesota have contributed to the fund. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Hansen here, and he's going to walk through specifically the recommendations that we had and some of the differences and comparisons with the governor's budget, if I may.
Mr. Chair, Hansen. Committee members, thank you for having us in today to walk through this stuff. As I look at slide 6, there's one point that I think that we need to be clear on up front, is that the Clean Water Council is unlike the Lesard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Committee, where the council funds programs, not individual projects. So we're looking at a higher level overview of which programs do we feel that the state agencies should implement to get to the outcomes and the goals that Pat just mentioned. And a lot of these programs, as you can see by looking at the pie chart on slide 6, you know, really emphasizes the need to deal with point and non-point source issues. So we're really focused on the ground stuff. So it's about 61% of our overall recommendations. And I'll come back to this a little bit as we go through the discussion on each of the individual programs. The other thing that I want to point out is that the total budget of the council's recommendation is the $221.6 million. That was, it came from us from one of the previous MMB revenue estimates. Since then, you've seen the February forecast, which provides an additional $3.557 million. The council is not making any recommendations as how those funds should be allocated. So we're sticking with the 221.6 that we originally came up with. Another point is that our recommendations are about 53% in agreement with where the state agency's recommendations are. In years past, we've been closer to 80, 85, 90%, but the variation that we're starting to see now is a direct result of our criteria and our guiding principles moving forward. As we go through these, I think just from a high-level standpoint, the differences that we see are the council is focused on statewide programs that we can address that covers the entire state, not just localized issues. As we've talked about already, it's focused on the ground types activities. We question in some of the agency recommendations whether there's defined outcomes. So we are looking for better clarity in those types of scenarios. And we're also concerned with the growing number of programs that we're starting to see come in under the Clean Water Council, under the Clean Water Fund. Right now we're up to, I think, 59 program recommendations, and that number over the past two or three biennials is beginning to increase. So we've got some concerns as to the overall administrative costs that are being utilized from the Clean Water Fund. That's not to say that the programs that the council is not funding are not important programs. We recognize the fact that they are, but we're just trying to prioritize as to how we feel the Clean Water Fund should be best spent. So with that, I'll move on to slide 7. I'll walk through the five
Mr.
or
Hansen,
six different.
I'm sorry. Sorry for interrupting, but if I can just ask, do you have a more careful analysis of the administrative costs that are going to the programs, how that's increased over the several years of the fund?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we have not got into that level of detail at this point in time, but it's something that's on our radar screen as we come back in 2 years with another budget recommendation. Okay. But that's a concern that we have. And there has been several discussions with the agencies about can we consolidate some of these things to try to minimize the amount of administrative expense.
Okay, thanks.
All right, referring to slide 7 then, monitoring assessment represents about 11% of the council's recommendations. At the end of this year, the PCA should be through about 75% of the watershed approach. I think the council and the agencies are in lockstep with the importance of this program. I think we vary a little bit with how this should get funded, but for the most part, this is one of the mainstays and the major stepping stones is to implement the overall program. So there's a lot of consistency between the various recommendations. Moving to slide 8, there is a couple of areas where we differ. We are funding more on the statewide watershed monitoring plan than what the agency is. And we're also not recommending any funding for the Department of Health's Lake Superior Beach Monitoring Program. And this gets back to one of my earlier comments about that's a very localized program. It's an important program, yes, but we've got, you know, over 10,000 waters in the state that we need to deal with everything on a statewide standpoint. So that's why I think for the most part this program has dropped off the radar screen for the council. The other thing is that we're not recommending any funding for the PCA's involvement in the expanded contaminant of new concern effort. This is something that came up after our initial discussions with the agency. We feel there's some overlap with what's going on with Department of Health. Moving to slide 9, The Watershed Restoration and Protective Strategies Program is another area where the council and I believe the agencies are in agreement. This is the other second building block that is very, very important to try to help identify where to prioritize the funds that go to implementation. So there's a lot of agreement from that perspective. Slide 10, the only place where we have less, or we are recommending less, is the agency, in particular the PCA, look for a cost of living adjustment. That's the way it was explained to us. As you heard from Assistant Commissioner Flood, they've got some additional information after we have had their discussions with us. So we limited that program to about a 4% cost of living increase, which we thought was generous from that perspective. Slide 11, the drinking water and groundwater protection programs. From the statute, the council has had a minimum requirement to fund drinking water programs to at 5%. This level of funding, although it shows 14% here, only 12% of that is related to the actual drinking water program. So every year, the council's recommendations we have far exceeded, and actually the percentage has grown from 7 to 12% for that requirement. Where we differ from the governor's recommendation, we've limited, here again, the PCA's programs that are covered under this activity to 5% increase. It's different than the 4 because when we came to the bottom line, we had to find a place to reduce overall, and we took it out of the previous program that I mentioned. We're recommending less funding for the Minnesota Department of Health's Contaminants of Emerging Concern program. The thought process from the council standpoint is that this program needs to have some type of an independent review. And rather than start to increase fundings in that, we thought it would be justified to have some overall look at that. We also recommended less funding for the Department of Health's well ceiling cost share program. And this gets at one of the issues that I didn't mention up front, whether funds should be used for private well or for private purposes or public purposes. The council is in full agreement that sealing public wells is something that needs to be considered under the well sealing program. Private wells, when you get into point of sale from the property, there's a requirement on the landowner to actually go ahead and do that sealing rather than we just don't feel it's beneficial to take private funds to do that or public funds to seal the private wells. We also have less funding for the Met Council's water demand reduction pilot. Here again, this deals with public versus private funding. And we're also recommending no funding for inflow and infiltration, both in the council and the governor's budget, at least at this point in time, the way we saw it, are in agreement there. Part of the rationale here is that there's been some localized concern west of the metro area. To deal with the issues that have come up in Mound, but there are several other areas across the state, Duluth, and there's a city in western Minnesota that I don't recall the name of right now, that have all found ways to actually come up and provide funds outside of the requesting the Clean Water Fund from that perspective. Slide 14 addresses the point non-point, which Pat and I have already mentioned, that this is where we really want to see the dollars go. This is where we're going to actually make some of the improvements that has already been discussed and provide that level of funding. Over the past few years, this level of funding has remained in the 55 to maybe 60% range. What the council wanted to do in this biennium is try to increase it. We've only got it up 61%, but as you'll hear Pat talk in a few minutes, this is one of the goals that we need to do. We feel if we're going to make improvements out there and deal with the underground, this level of funding has got to go up. And therefore, some of the reductions are going to have to come in the other program areas. On slide 13, we address the need for funding Bowser's program. Some of their programs they're getting, they're only able to fund about 25% of the total requests that they get from local governmental units. So this is one of the things that we feel we definitely need to spend some time on and make sure that the local governmental units are not wasting their time putting together grant proposals that have no chance of getting funded. So we're looking for increases there. We're also recommending less funding for the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program. This year, I think we're either in year two or three of that pilot program. We would like to see more successes than where we are right now. So we've basically left that level of funding, I think, at $3 million or $2 million. It's been funded at three. They're asking for five. We're looking at less funding for Department of Ag programs and DNR programs where we feel that the outcomes are unclear based on our negotiations back and forth with the agencies. We just haven't been able to surmise whether that what we are really going to be getting for the dollars that we're spending. Another recommendation here is not to fund the Clean Water Partnership Program with PCA. There's concern about substitution and there's duplication, and this is where, from an administrative standpoint, you've got PCA administrating a Clean Water Partnership Program, and you got the Board of Water and Soil Resources funding the same type of a program. So we'd like to see some cooperation and coordination between those two entities to try to reduce the overall administrative load there. Also, we did not provide funding for the MDA vegetative cover soil and health program, but we did recommend funding, I think, in another area to the tune of about $500,000 to investigate the use of cover crops. We think that that's is something that definitely has merit, but we need to figure out how to administer that program between the various agencies.
Mr. Chair.
Senator,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we're on the topic of monitoring and not overlapping here. We have a new council, Water Council. I think you're familiar with it. I think it was just most recently put together. Are you familiar with that at all?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'm not quite sure which council you're talking about.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is a Water Council that has been put together. I don't know that they've even met yet, but I'm wondering if anybody, if either one of you know anything about it, and if you're looking forward to at least working together and, again, trying to cut down on some of this monitoring if there's overlap.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, members of the committee, yes, if you're referring to the Legislative Water Commission, yes, we have been both in touch and starting to coordinate activities with that coordinator for that legislative commission. Two of the members on that commission who happen to be the co-chairs are also participants on the Clean Waters Council, Senator Scalzi and Representative Torkelson. And we've been talking a little bit about what's their role, what's our role, how can we support them in their efforts, and what kind of information might we be able to help provide to them to assist them in their efforts. There is some connection, but not necessarily duplication. They're looking more at legislative policy concerning water across the state versus actual implementation of the Clean Water Fund. And certainly there's an intersection there, but those are also two slightly different worlds of existence that are necessary going forward.
And, Mr. Chair, one more. Mr. Hansen, you mentioned about the statewide. You're into the statewide, and I appreciate that, not just targeting a single area, but we have a southwest water problem in the state of Minnesota, very huge one, as you well know, from drinking water. Are you doing any additional things for that area of the state? Because we are putting statewide dollars into a bonding program. The capital investment chair sits next to me, and there's many millions of dollars to bring in drinking water to the southwest part of our state. And, you know, I come from a district where I have literally 1,500 lakes, and when you try and explain to people that you're spending bonding dollars on bringing water into the state of Minnesota, they look at you like you're a little out there. Maybe you've been in the water a little bit too long, you know. The reason I bring this up is not a got you question by any stretch, but it's a serious issue down there. And is the Clean Water Council looking at that at all? Targeting that at all or looking into anything there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebretson, The council's recommendations, when you look at this overall sheet of all our program recommendations, the area that I think you're referring to is the yellow area, which is the groundwater and drinking water category. We did take that into consideration when we came up and recommended the programmatic funding within those various areas. Specifically, did we focus on the Southwest? No, we did not. But we looked at the overall programs and used that as part of our prioritization process. Pat, do you want to add anything?
No, sir. No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no. We've not looked specifically into the Lewis to Clark project. And again, it gets back a little bit to kind of the Clean Water Council's focus, which is more programmatic rather than specific issue by issue. But it's an issue that we can certainly take a look into and see how that should affect kind of the overall plan for funding going forward for some of these programs if there's a statewide issue that we can apply there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I've got just two more slides to walk through, and then I'm going to turn it back to Pat for some closing remarks. Slide 15 addresses applied research and tool development. This is an area that in the past has received a little bit more funding. We're coming to the end of some of the tool development, and therefore we're seeing a little bit of a reduction in this area compared to years past. Look at slide 16. On the first bullet there addresses the perennial crop and cover research program, is what I previously mentioned earlier. We are not recommending any funding for the MPCA's wastewater treatment system and design technical assistance program. Basically, the reason for that is both the industrial community and the municipalities have resource organizations which are also doing what we consider to be the same type of thing. So we look at this as a duplication effort, and it's something that we feel is best placed in the public and the private sector, not with PCA. The last item is less funding for MDA's scientific research evaluation program. Here again, it's from an outcome standpoint. We really haven't had a lot of opportunities to figure out, okay, how is this going to move our bottom line from an overall improvement standpoint? With that, I'll turn it back to Pat.
Mr. Flowers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, slide 17. If you've had a chance to look at things like the Clean Water Performance Report and the roadmap, you kind of get the sense that there's only limited progress that's potentially going to be made if we continue on the same kind of road and the same glide path that we're on right now, both with the Clean Water Fund as well as with state and private efforts that are going on a statewide basis. And the council just really believes that we need to try to find some more creative ways to move that, to change the slope of that curve, to make more progress than what we're showing, and realizing that, you know, it is a moving target. It's not something that's sitting static, but at the same time, you know, it's important for the future generations to have and to be able to maintain a cleaner water standard. And so we're really pushing to try to find creative ways to do that and engaging some of our stakeholder groups to help us with that. One of the things that the council believes is that we really have to put a higher percentage of our funds towards those on-the-ground projects, and that's part of the difference between the council's recommendations and the governor's. The governor pared out a fair amount of it, almost back to its historical funding level, those on-the-ground projects, and then dispersed that into other programs. And it's not that those other programs are bad. It's just that given what we feel we need to do and what the citizens of this state feel should be done with this fund and to achieve outcomes, we felt like it was better prioritized and would achieve better outcomes for all of us if we focused more on those on-the-ground projects. We also need to find a greater proportion of other funding to help us, and this part of this comes from federal levels, but also local level funding, as well as funding from the state outside of the Clean Water Fund to assist this, and in some cases perhaps funding from private groups that are involved in conservation efforts to come alongside and supplement and complement the work that's being done with the Clean Water Fund approach. It's important to recognize that this is just a limited amount of money for a limited amount of time, and we don't want to put these dollars to things that are really long-term issues and that will continue on after the fund's done. And so to that point, and a little bit to what Senator Tomasoni brought up in his questions, you know, we need to be cautious about increasing the administrative and overhead burden that we expect the Clean Water Fund to bear, because that's only going to dilute its capability in the future to make the outcomes that are needed. So that's one of the things that we're focusing on as we get ready to prepare, not for budgeting this year, but next year, is coming up with mechanisms where we can evaluate that a little better and become a little more of an independent voice as we develop these budget recommendations for the legislature and the governor. Thank you for your time this evening. We really appreciate it. If you have any more questions, please, we're here. But thank you for your time this evening and for hearing us. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either Mr. Flowers or Mr. Hansen? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Senator Thomas.
Just as long as we were talking about buffer zones before, Mr. Chairman. So are these recommendations, number 42, riparian buffer permanent conservation easements, are they the same as the governor's buffer zone recommendations, or is that a different thing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, members of the committee, no, these recommendations were developed before the governor's buffer initiative came out, so these were existing programs through Bowser to establish and maintain buffers with the existing laws as they exist. They were not related at all to the governor's buffer initiative.
And so the previous conversation that we had about implementation of $2.4 million, that's just in addition to this money, or is that just the part of the governor's buffer zone implementation?
Keith, I'm going to ask you to, because you remember the details better.
Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, I don't think there's a relationship between the council's recommendation in line item 42 and the 2.4 that the governor has recommended.
Okay.
Mr. Hansen, is that because of timing or?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I think that's partly due to that aspect of it. You know, I don't think we understand where the governor's, what the background in the for pulling that number together is, and we've not looked into that at this point in time.
Yes, just one more question.
Chairman Thomason.
And one of my frustrations about what we do as far as clean water is concerned is that we require small cities to upgrade their wastewater treatment systems and their drinking systems. And they're very, very costly, and we don't always give them as much help, I don't believe, as we can possibly give them. And it seems to me that the PFA recommendation is rather low. How do you come up with the I think it's $18.5 million total here, and out of $221 million. How do you come up with that, or is that a request from the agency, or how do you get to there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, on that recommendation, we had several discussions with PFA about what the short and long-term prognosis is for that program. And for this recommendation, it was our understanding they feel they've got sufficient funds available to deal with it in the short term because it is a revolving loan fund. Jeff Freeman can probably give you a better idea of that than what we can. But the long-term outlook, I think, is to increase that level of funding for PFA.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So next on the agenda we have Mr. Price relative to the Conservation Corps. Senator Price.
Good evening. Thank you, Senator Cohen and members. It's my pleasure to appear here this evening on behalf of Conservation Corps Minnesota and Iowa, which is not a state agency. It's not a quasi-state agency. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, which benefits from the fact that there are legacy dollars available to do lots of initiatives in the natural resource world. Specifically, we have a relationship when it comes to clean water with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And we've had in the past, due to the support of the legislature, language and an appropriation to Bowser, which ultimately means that Conservation Corps Minnesota and Iowa gets access to work through Bowser because Bowser gives grants to local units of government. And we've had in the past language that has allowed up to $500,000 each year through these grant programs to local units of government. And then those local units of government contract with Conservation Corps crews to successfully complete the projects. So I provided, thank you to the staff, I provided the appropriations and the actual work sites since 2012 from the Legacy Fund. And I did that because I wanted you to see the variety of entities that we work with. They include soil water conservation districts. I think you have a four-pager stapled together. Water conservation districts, WMOs, cities, counties, metro watershed districts. You can see the list each year, and then don't ask me what the specifics of these projects were, because I don't know the details of all the projects we've done every year. If you are curious about that, we can provide that information. But to show you the variety of things that we've done, we have done lots of things with rain garden work. Rain gardens are a way, a strategy to help surface water get recharged into the groundwater. We've done buffer installations, which you're familiar with and have been talking a lot about this weekend or this evening. We've done shoreline restoration from biotech logs to riprap in some places. We've done stream bank stabilization. There's a process by which this relationship occurs, and that's outlined in the report that the Board of Water and Soil Resources provides to the legislature each year. And I think I contacted staff with a link to that report. And just from that report, you can see the process that works. And maybe Mr. Wierens could give you more elaboration if you're interested in that. But these applicants for the grants have to have certain criteria met in order for Bowser to consider them. Things like they have to have a county water plan, they have to have a surface water plan, a wellhead protection plan, things that have happened throughout the course of time to try to deal with water issues. And then the Bowser people supply that list of eligible recipients to us. We go through the list and say, no, we can't do that work. We don't have the skills, or we don't have the equipment. It's just not within our means to do it. Or, which is what I like to say, oh, yeah, this is a perfect project for us. It requires things that most other contractors don't want to do. It requires hand labor. It fits in nicely with the skill set that our Corps members have, and it fits in nicely with the mission of the Corps, which is to engage young people in a natural resource, hands-on environmental learning experience. Many of these folks want to someday become professionals in the natural resource arena. And there's a process with a calendar in which we then make comment back to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and then they pass judgment, if you would, on which ones will be funded and which ones then we will contract with as local units of government. We appreciate the language that's been in the bill. I corresponded with the chair and suggested that the 2013 session law language and the level of funding would be perfect for us. It would be $500,000 each year in the next biennium. If you want to give us more money, we could certainly consider that. I mean, it would have to come through Bowser. You don't give it to us. But we need planning time to actually get geared up to have an adequate number of crews to address this kind of work, because this isn't the only thing that these AmeriCorps individuals get engaged in. But we just appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we certainly want to thank you for the support that you've given as we help try to prepare the professionals for the next generation in Minnesota in dealing with natural resources.
So appreciate the testimony, and I wish I could have you back every hearing to have everybody listen to you, all the folks requesting money that we're just satisfied with what we had in 2013.
Well, I'll be here tomorrow night too, Mr. Chairman, with the Parks and Trails. Again, we don't get the money. DNR gets it, or the other Metro Park systems, and hopefully we'll be able to develop a relationship with
Be fair to come back every night and repeat that.
Okay, very good.
Questions for Senator Price, Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, and Senator Price, is planning and implementation the same thing?
I see them from my organization as two distinct things. We're in the business of implementing a lot of things. As was testified earlier here by the Clean Water Council, is one of their priorities. I like to see the stuff get done on the ground. We can do that.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Price? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Mr. Woods from Freshwater.
You should see if it does. It's a disaster.
Mine always is.
Mr. Woods.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Steve Woods. I'm executive director at the Freshwater Society, and really just going to raise three points tonight.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, shouldn't Mr. Woods be working for forestry?
Oh.
Good night, everybody.
You didn't ask that question of Mr. Flowers.
We had Commissioner Rivers here.
Flood.
We had flood in Rivers.
So.
It gets a little goofy at night here.
Mr. Woods.
Mr. Chairman, three comments tonight. One on process and two on the contents of the council's recommendations. The Freshwater Society found the efforts of the council this year to be very good, and the feedback that we and other interested parties gave was also much more than we had seen in previous years. Our organization received multiple requests for input from the council, which was rather unprecedented. And every time we approached them with something, we got answers to our questions. So from a process standpoint, we really liked what they went through and what they came up with. So first, my two comments on the content. Our organization did review the overall approach that the council was taking. Minnesota is fortunate to have invested so much in recent years to identify where the real problems are out there. And this is something few other states have done. And the council's emphasis on trying to put money into on-the-ground projects, we heartily support. That ability to move dirt or keep dirt from moving, as the project may be, is a wonderful emphasis. We spent 3 years on a FarmWise program talking with landowners and local organizations about what's slowing down on-the-ground conservation, where are the bottlenecks in the system. And what we heard over and over was two primary things. Part of the bottleneck is not enough local technical staff to pull it off. And secondly, delays or the timing of when money was available when a landowner was interested in doing something. And we think the council's approach to making more money available for that helps address both of those issues. And secondarily, the fact that the money that they are proposing for implementation for the on-the-ground work is usually coming out in line items in the appropriation that are in excess of $1 million. It's not cut up into a bunch of smaller $200,000 here, $300,000 there, which the local organizations told us creates a lot of administrative burden and inertia and makes it tougher to get money into projects because landowners aren't exactly sure what they might or might not qualify for. The second and last of my comments on the content is that in addition to that other on-the-ground money, we very much like the $18 million being recommended by the council for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, or CREP dollars, which came up here a couple times earlier this evening. Well, we like this serious and bold move to target funds to riparian areas, provide some different ground cover throughout the year, and the bonus points really go for that leveraging the federal funds. If successful in getting that 80 to 20 federal to state leveraging of money, that really does stretch these Clean Water Fund dollars quite a bit more while producing multiple benefits. That's the end of the prepared comments that I had.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. Questions for Mr. Woods? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, the next on the agenda from the Minnesota Environmental Partnership is former Senator Morris, who actually, you have kind of an interesting intersection in terms of careers. You were the former chairman of the Environment Finance Division here in the Senate. You were the deputy commissioner of DNR and now the executive director of the Environmental Partnership. So kind of a unique combination of roles.
Many hats, Mr. Chairman. Many hats. My head has wrinkles in it from all those hats. Steve Morse, executive director of Minnesota Environmental Partnership. We are the state's largest coalition of environmental conservation groups with 70 organizations representing something over 400,000 Minnesotans, including such groups as the Freshwater Society, who you just heard from. And we agree and endorse Mr. Wood's comments also. Mr. Chairman, I just want to take a few minutes to make a few points about the Clean Water Council recommendations and the Clean Water Fund. As I think you understand, and we appreciate the opportunity to have a few minutes here tonight, especially at this late hour. But as I think you understand, Mr. Chairman, clean water was really the driving force behind adoption of the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment. In many different ways. And one of the other factors that was key when we were all working on that amendment was the idea of citizen oversight. Whenever we talked about how the funds would be distributed, we'd talk about the key role of citizens in overviewing how the money will be allocated, how it will be used, doing assessments, et cetera. That falls right in line with the Clean Water Council role. The Clean Water Council is charged with really addressing some of the most intractable issues we have in the environmental arena today, which is how do we deal with some of our really long-term water quality issues. Their history goes back to, as I think was said earlier, the 2006 Clean Water Legacy Act. They have a process this year that you've heard about that we would just concur with was much more open and participatory. They are a council that represents, appointed by the governor, and represents the various sectors that have to do with the implementation work, people that do the policy work, research work. All the various players are presented and represented at the council. This year, as Mr. Flowers said, they developed some principles, priorities, had regular feedback and input opportunities. And my advice to you and the committee, Mr. Chairman, is to really take their work product seriously. They did the scrutiny that, quite frankly, this you don't have the time to do. They went through the recommendations by the agencies that were brought to them, asked a lot of hard questions. One of our former colleagues and former chair of this committee is now the vice chair of the council and was very involved in the budgetary process. And they really put some scrutiny to the entire process. And to me, I think it's really wise to support the citizen participation process and the integrity of the amendment in the process. And so we really encourage you to support the work of the Clean Water Council. And I know there'll be a bill that will be heard, I believe, next week, specifically with the Clean Water Council recommendations that vary somewhat from the governor, although there's a lot of overlap. I believe it's really important that we as kind of a outside accountability watchdog and you as legislators watching over these funds really give credence and credibility to the citizen process and the council process, unless there are some major issues that you can identify that we have not seen. With that little bit on process, I'd just like to comment a couple of things about some of the really good things that we see in the council recommendations as well as in the governor's recommendations. We think some of the major efforts to do the 10-year monitoring that is going on around the entire state is just excellent work that needs to continue. And the development of the RAPs, again, on a 10-year cycle, is really critical and needs to continue. The recommendations from the council and the governor don't quite align. But again, we think we should stick with the council recommendations because of the scrutiny that they've put into it. They've also done a few other things that the governor didn't do. And one of them that is particularly important to us that are really thinking down the road on the water quality issues is the Forever Green Initiative. And in your packet, you should have a booklet that talks about the Forever Green Initiative from the University of Minnesota. I hope it's in your packet. Yes. But basically, I see a panic look. No, it is in the packet. Yes, it is in the packet. I see them appearing. But I just want to say a word of that. We, as in the advocacy community, working with people in the agricultural community, feel it's really important that the university get funds directed for this purpose to develop new and different types of agricultural crops that will provide more vegetative cover on the landscape, which will provide new economic diversity and cropping diversity for farmers while protecting our water, while improving our soil health, and also improving and providing habitat. So it's really a triple win. The council saw the wisdom of that and included not as much as we'd like. I think last year the legislature appropriated $1 million for that. The council recommended just $500,000, which is a good first step. But unfortunately, the governor, again, in reverting directly to his agency recommendations, did not recommend anything on this. And so we hope the committee and the Senate will take a longer view and look at these things that really provide us a big payback in the long term. Lastly, I'd like to recommend just one concern on the package from the agencies that they've brought forward, and that involves the Clean Water Partnership Program. The issue came up earlier, I think, from Senator Ingebrigtsen and others about the question of substitution. The Clean Water Partnership Program is item number 37. The council decided not to recommend any funds for the Clean Water Partnership Program. The governors and agencies are recommending $3 million. Senator Cohen, you may recall, and Senator Stumpf, this was a program, maybe you don't recall because you don't spend as much time in this area, but carried by former Senator Willett back in 1988. It was one of the earlier efforts to really do systematic cleanup of our waters. As we passed the Clean Water Legacy Act and then the Clean Water Legacy Amendment, we've really brought new funding in that really does this systematically rather than the way the partnership did going into specific communities. And what's interesting, the general fund money for the Clean Water Partnership has all gone away. But the program isn't dying because now they're turning and saying, well, there's this new money here in the Clean Water Fund. Let's go to the Clean Water Fund and get the money to continue that. And we think that's an example where we should really be looking at the questions of substitution there because the general fund money is all gone for that program, and we're not sure it makes sense to then come in and take these legacy dollars and continue that program forward. And the council, in their wisdom, said, no, we probably shouldn't be doing that, and there are issues about substitution. We have some other concerns about substitution, but that's one of the ones we'd bring to your attention. So in summary, Mr. Chairman and members, we think the council process, the package is not perfect. There are certainly things that our coalition would like to change a little bit, but we think it was a solid process. We think it's a solid package. We ask for you to support the Clean Water Council recommendations, and we think it makes a lot of sense. Clearly, the governor has brought in the buffers into the conversation recently. We're in full support of the governor's initiative around buffers, and we don't know exactly how they'll influence this and intersect, but we do think that the funding for that makes a lot of sense. I would, again, just encourage you to use the council process, their analysis, their kind of arm's-length independent look on it, their judgment, and help them through this process rather than just referring to the agency process, and use that citizen accountability and oversight that was so important with the public when we passed the legacy amendment. What we should be doing is working with the council to make their process more rigorous and give them a higher role in this process, and that's why we're supporting the council recommendations in the process.
Okay. And Mr. Morris, obviously your testimony has been directed primarily to the recommendations from the council. Is that a consensus on the part of all the environmental partnership groups and associations? Is there any kind of formal process, or is it?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yes. Within our membership, as well as, you know, as I think you'll see when you get to Representative or Senator Scalzi's bill, a number of the groups that work together as part of the G16 process that brought us the Clean Water Legacy Act, are also in support of the council recommendations. A group worked together to put the council together and have been involved with the council process, support the council recommendations. And we go through a process with our groups internally to figure out our process. And there is another water event going on tonight, so I'm the messenger here tonight for our partnership, in addition to Mr. Woods.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Morris, there was a number that always stuck out in my mind that you used to talk about as far as general fund dollars the state of Minnesota was spending towards the environment. What is that now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative or Senator Engelbretson, I don't remember exactly what the absolute number is, but what's happening, the way we judge it, is it's a percentage of state general fund dollars. Our test as a community has been, because of what the Constitution says, that we should supplement and not substitute for a traditional level of funding, we feel we ought to get a consistent level of the percentage. And that was around 1% when the legacy amendment was passed, and now we're edging down below 0.75%. And so although last year we had some increase in absolute dollars as a percentage, as the state budget grows, support from the state for environment and conservation programs is getting smaller and smaller. And I can certainly get you that number, but it's shrinking. And we think that there are three tests we use to judge whether the state is substituting and following the intent of the legacy amendment. The state does pretty well on the other two, which is raiding other funds and bonding, but on the general fund appropriations, it keeps going down, down, down.
Further questions for Mr. Morris? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's the conclusion of individuals on the agenda that I've been that have been presented to me. Is there anybody else who'd like to testify to the subcommittee? Okay. All right. Well, thank you to everybody who testified. And members will meet tomorrow at 7 o'clock to listen to the recommendations from the Lessard-Sams Commission, as well as the Parks and Trails section of the fund. So if there are no further questions,
Mr. Chair, I was going to ask this question. Is there a certain percentage that always goes to the bottom line of the Clean Water Fund? I know Lessard-Sams tries to keep 5% on hand at all times. Is that similar in nature? Do we know?
Yeah, there's been that attempt to do so.
Okay.
And that's
so
been
that
the recommendation.
When
you chaired, I think it was the same recommendation from the fiscal staff to do so. Further questions or comments? Otherwise, we'll adjourn for the evening and be back tomorrow. Are we in this room? Back here in 15. So, thank you.